Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, before we're done today, I have what is probably a little bit of a dumb idea. At least it seems that way on paper, right at first blush. It's something I think the SEC could do that I think UGA fans would actually enjoy. I'll tell you more about that coming up today here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. We'll also check in with our buddy Mike Griffith from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. We'll find out what has been going on with the former UGA guys there, getting ready to make their name in the NFL world. We'll do all of that coming up in a moment. Let me begin this way. I briefly mentioned this, I think, at some point in time this week. I'm sure you probably read about this at DogNation.com. As predicted, Tim Brewster, who's kind of bluster for hire, he's been a little bit of a hype man wherever he's worked. He was head coach at Minnesota, total failure in that job. A little more successful as an assistant coach working with Jimbo Fisher, most recently as an assistant coach at UNC. He's one of these guys brought to Florida now as tight ends coach, whose job really is to provide the Gators what they have not really had. Dan Mullen is just not a black belt recruiter. He is just not one of these guys that kind of tapes up his knuckles and goes to, you know, hand-to-hand combat in the world of recruiting the SEC and does very well. Not only does he not recruit the SEC footprint particularly well, he doesn't even recruit his own state all that well. That's just not really been his MO. He's one of these guys that's made a name for himself. You know, you see this a lot of times when it comes to like Academy Award season. You know, if you like movies, things like that, there are critically acclaimed movies. You know, not necessarily a movie that made a lot of money at the box office, not necessarily a movie that a lot of people really enjoyed, but man, writers, they loved it. Guys who and gals who do reviews for a living, guys and gals who spend their entire life on Twitter kind of, you know, talking over everybody else's head. Boy, they love these movies. They're critically acclaimed movies. You see a lot of that Academy Award season time. That's really kind of what Dan Mullen is as a coach. He's a critically acclaimed coach. The sports writer who wants to show you how smart he is or how smart she is will say, listen, Dan Mullen, when it comes to coaching him up, boy, he really did that. For my money, he was the best coach in the SEC West when he was coaching at Mississippi State because he found a way to do more with less. That was always kind of Mullen's reputation. But at Florida, as many of you know, and this is actually a compliment even though I'm a Gator hater, at Florida, the goal, the objective, isn't to do more with less. The goal is to do more with more. Match the resources of your chief competition. Find a way to a win game. So now Dan Mullen's going to kind of reinvent himself a little bit. He's gotten all these pats in the backs all these years for kind of coaching up three stars and finding a way to win seven games with a bunch of, you know, guys that were not getting the highest level of SEC offer. But at Florida, that's not what the job is. The job is doing more than that. So it's taken him a couple years, I think, to kind of maybe come to grips with that. And here in the 2021 cycle, it sounds like Florida is finally ready. They're not going to be pushed around anymore when it comes to recruiting, and loudmouth Tim Brewster is maybe the guy that's going to kind of help usher that new era in. He was on a 24/7 sports podcast. It's a pretty volatile quote. I mean, honestly, I'm not mad about it. I just think it's funny and fun and I guess somewhat interesting, and it sets us up for where we want to go today. Tim Brewster telling 24/7 sports, Georgia is Georgia. And you could have just stopped at that, and that would have been probably enough. But he goes on to say, Kirby's done a good job, but what we've got to do is we've got to put stakes in the ground. That fence has got to go up. So he becomes the latest of a line of, what, like 9 million coaches to say, we're going to build a fence around our state at the Florida-Georgia border. Listen, there are a lot of Georgians, not even college football fans, would love to have a fence around the state of Florida if it kept some Floridians out. But nonetheless, he goes on to say, Kirby's got to understand that the state of Georgia is the state of Georgia, okay? We recruit the state of Georgia. We're going to get some really good players from Georgia, but we need to make sure that he understands we're going to fight him tooth and nail for the greatest resource in the state of Florida. That's the high school kids here. And just make sure that he understands and sends them that message on a daily basis that we're going to protect our own. That is Florida tight ends coach Tim Brewster via a podcast on 24/7 Sports, and I'll put a link to it when we post the show later on at theworldfamousdognation.com. I cannot stress this enough. I am not mad at Tim Brewster for this. This is, to kind of borrow, a line that's been used before, this is what you're supposed to do. Like, you're supposed to try to keep your own kids in state, and you're supposed to try to recruit. The fact that a guy like Brewster has to kind of come in, you know, with a megaphone shouting all this, the fact that it took Florida this long to do that is, I think that's pretty funny, you know, kind of all the way around there. But nonetheless, that's just kind of what Florida is doing right now. They're sort of getting Tim Brewster involved in all this, and he's going to set a new tone for the program when it comes to recruiting, and this is kind of what you expect kind of moving on here, moving forward here. This is what we're going to kind of do, which is all fine and well. Here's my advice. Just be careful what you wish for when it comes to picking a fight with Kirby Smart in recruiting. And I don't just mean across the country, and I don't just mean in Georgia's home state right here in the state of Georgia. I mean in the state of Florida as well. Be careful what you wish for that you don't set up Kirby Smart to want to challenge you more in your own home state, whether it be taking a guy like Jalen Carter from this past cycle, taking a guy like Warren Brinson from this past cycle, who, by the way, you may remember this. Brinson was a UGA commit, decommitted from Georgia, announced a top two of Georgia and Florida, and then committed to Georgia again, essentially spiking the football on Florida in this past cycle. Be careful what you wish for when it comes to all of that. And maybe the grandest example of this of all, do you remember when Carson Beck, the 2020 quarterback signing for the Georgia Bulldogs, first announced his pledge to UGA? He's from that Jacksonville area. He goes on a Jacksonville TV station there. And obviously, he's talking on that TV station, that Jacksonville area, to a good number of Florida fans in that sort of First Coast type area. He's talking to a lot of them. And listen to the honesty with which Carson Beck spoke about the Florida offer and the good that that Florida offer did him to get what he really wanted. This is the guy that Tim Brewster is picking in a fight with when it comes to recruiting. Let me remind you about Carson Beck from Jacksonville Television.
I had obviously named Florida as my leader, and I kind of just like put that out there to say, hey, like, this is the team that's coming at me the hardest. This is the team where I feel like I could see myself at. But also, I had two schools kind of like in the back of my head, one of those being Georgia, where if I got that offer, I would pause for a second and say, okay, hold on, I got to kind of take this in. So I visited up there, and it was absolutely awesome and everything that I expected.
So listen, that is the guy that you're talking about here. Kirby Smart, the guy who convinced Carson Beck to use the Florida offer to get the Georgia offer and then go on local TV and dunk on him because of that. That's who you're picking a fight with here, and that's who you have to be very, very careful with. So, listen, I'm not mad at Tim Brewster. I think it's kind of fun. I think this is what makes the SEC great, the fact that so many programs fight over so few elite players, and that's always the biggest story behind all of this. There are never going to be enough elite players to go around. When you get them, you don't just help your own program, but you hurt the other program who wasn't able to get those players, especially when you go into that state and do that with a Marcus Roseme, with a Jalen Carter, with a Warren Brinson, with a Carson Beck, and some of those kinds of names. So Florida apparently trying to throw its hat into the ring when it comes to recruiting. I guess good for them. Glad they're trying to do that now. But just be careful what you wish for when it comes to battling Kirby Smart on anyone's turf, including your own. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon as well on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you on the show today. I told you off the top we're going to have Mike Griffith on the show. It sounds like Mike's got a little bit of a scheduling conflict or whatever. Sounds like we're not going to be able to have him on. Let's just make sure we communicate that with him, that he's not going to, have time to be with us today. Michael, are you hearing me right now? Can you let him know that? So it sounds like Michael's got Mike Griffith has got a scheduling conflict. So we'll figure out some other time to have him on the program here today. Of course, good to have all of you with us. We'll have some fun here coming up. And it's all brought to you by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. They are your source for Georgia divorce. Of course, you can check them out. And listen, I realize that divorce can be not such a fun topic to talk about. I completely understand that. But here's the thing you got to understand, though. If you find yourself going through this, what you're going to want is someone who's been through this before. You're going to want someone who has who has that institutional knowledge, who's kind of collected, you know, experience gained by going through this thousands of times before, helping people thousands of times before, kind of put their life back together, put their finances back together, put their relationship with their family back together. That's what Meriwether and Tharp is famous for, and that's what they want to do for you. I have hung out with my friends at Meriwether and Tharp plenty. I'm always impressed by the generosity which would they approach such a tough, tough topic. So let me invite you to check them out online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. And as I said before, they are your source for Georgia divorce. It's a Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. And let's get ready to go around the doghouse right now. And I think one of the most interesting things to come out of the NFL scouting combine this past week in Indianapolis, and it's been ongoing, is something that former Georgia offensive lineman Isaiah Wilson had to say. Wilson is a pretty sharp guy, and he was always a very good player at Georgia. And in talking about his own career, Wilson was always really good at discussing that, always really insightful in terms of what he was trying to do and kind of how he got to the process that he got to as a starter and kind of a bedrock member of that Georgia offensive line. And he's also got great insight into other offensive linemen as well, including the ones that are going to follow him up at the University of Georgia. I want to give you a couple of examples of that as we go around the doghouse here today. Let me start with this. Our buddy Mike Griffith, who was going to join us today, and I guess we'll catch up with him at some other time. Our buddy Mike asked Isaiah if he had had a chance to see the Sugar Bowl and what he thought of the offensive line that day that played without him and Andrew Thomas and, you know, some of the other guys. What was it like to see that offensive line in place with maybe some backup guys kind of stepping into a starting role? And I thought that Wilson gave a very, very forceful endorsement of kind of the group of linemen following in his footsteps there at UGA. I think you'll like this. Here's Isaiah Wilson.
Those aren't filling guys. They're talented. They're starters everywhere else, I guarantee it. So they're not filling guys in my eyes. Those guys are some ballers. I had fun watching them. They definitely made me proud, for sure.
So I think that's a really good stuff from Isaiah Wilson. And I think it's a good reminder for Georgia fans, a couple of things here. First of all, it's obvious that during the Kirby Smart era, even though that Kirby's a defensive guy, he's also kind of ushered in sort of a level of physical toughness, tenacity to the Georgia program. And the brand that Georgia's established has been on defense. It's been running the football. And that brand has been established along the offensive line as well. And when a guy like Sam Pittman makes the decision to leave and go become head coach at Arkansas, and Georgia, maybe a little different than some of the SEC teams, actually celebrate when the guy has a chance to improve his professional standing and get a bigger and better job and make more money. You wish Pittman well on the way out the door, but it does leave some Georgia fans trying to ask the question of, well, you know, what is really going on here with the future of the Georgia offensive line? With no more Pittman, is this bedrock identity that Georgia's been able to establish, is that still going to be the way going forward? Is Georgia still going to have a good offensive line, or not just a good offensive line, what Georgia aspires to is kind of a great offensive line? Is that still going to be the case in the absence of a Wilson, in the absence of an Andrew Thomas? And you hear Isaiah step up this week in Indianapolis and say, yeah, you better believe, those aren't backups. Those aren't guys that they may be guys that the average SEC fan has never heard of, but UGA fans have followed these names, the Warren Ericksons, the Xavier Trusses, the others. They follow them on the recruiting trail, and you better believe they are ready for their moment, their opportunity to shine here at UGA. In fact, Wilson went into even more detail to a question from Connor Riley about just how good he thinks the offensive line can be in 2020. Wilson won't be a part of it, but in terms of big-time results, that's still what Isaiah Wilson is expecting. Here's also what he said.
Jamari Sawyer, Trey Hill, Warren Erickson, Xavier Truss, the whole O-line. Definitely. And if you're sleeping on them, they're going to wake you up. And I can't wait to watch them wake you up.
Yeah, so listen, I think that is just really, really good stuff from Isaiah Wilson. Just that level of confidence of, hey, if you're sleeping on them, they're going to wake you up. And I think for Georgia fans is also comforting as well. As you look at the Matt Luke era and what's going to go on with the Georgia offensive line there, the thought here is, at least from one of the guys who knows these players really, really well, that all of this is going to fall into place. And Georgia, in terms of a new generation of linemen led by a new offensive line coach and everything else, it should all be really, really good. It's great to have you here with us today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. Make sure you check out the Dog Nation YouTube page for a lot more on what happened at Indianapolis this week. Stuff on DeAndre Swift, Jake Fromm, really good long interview with Jake Fromm, and a whole lot more fun stuff. You ought to make sure you check out the Dog Nation YouTube page for a whole lot more on that. And for now, we got plenty of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, coming up. All right, so as I said before, we were going to have Mike Griffith on the show. Come to find out, Mike didn't have as much time as I thought he did. It's always weird to kind of find out about that in the moment. But nonetheless, Mike's not available today. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to take a few of your comments. So instead of me interviewing somebody else, you can take some time to kind of interview me. And we'll have a really good time here on a very different version of our show today. But nonetheless, really, really good stuff. So give me a second to pop up the comments. You can talk about the Florida stuff if you want to. You can talk about whatever else. And for our podcast radio audience, I realize it's a little bit different. But nonetheless, I think it's going to be really fun. We'll just kind of riff here. And we'll just sort of take the conversation wherever you want to go after what has been kind of a wild week. The addition of Scott Cochran. These guys trying to make a name for themselves in the NFL. The evaluation. You know, I think in Wilson's case, and this is one of the things I think I'm going to try to write about at some point in time this week at DogNation.com, Wilson's kind of been in the spotlight a bit because he is a guy that, you know, has kind of been told by famous names, Mel Kiper even, hey, maybe you should have stayed in school. Maybe you should have, you know, come back for one more year. But when you hear Wilson, and the full video is up at the Dog Nation YouTube page, when you hear that, you still see a real confidence in him, not just a confidence expressed by the next generation of Georgia offensive linemen. That's the audio that you just heard, but a confidence about his own game and what he's ready to do and how he feel like he played against some of the better competition. There's a lot of first round style pass rushers that you battle against in the SEC or the schedule that Georgia played. It sounds like Wilson feels like he did pretty well against those guys. So Wilson's one of those interesting names of, does his ultimate draft position validate his decision to leave school early, not just leaving after his junior year or his third year at a high school, but in Wilson's case, it was a redshirt sophomore year that he left after not playing in 2017. All right, Charles Wright makes his feelings on Facebook very clear about the Florida Gators. And yeah, listen, I love the rivalry. I love stoking the flames of all that. I just think that's really fun to be able to do. And as I said before, I'm not really mad that, you know, Florida's brought in some assistant who's like talking about closing the borders and talking about, you know, building the fence, run the best players. You know, that's not the way that I feel about that. I mean, this is what Florida's supposed to be doing. I wouldn't expect a Florida assistant coach to say anything less. However, I think what Georgia fans enjoy right now is the idea of, if you really want to poke at Georgia, if you really want to If you really want to pick on Kirby Smart when it comes to something like this, you just better be ready for what comes next. After the way the Brinson recruitment played out this past year, the way the Beck recruitment played out this past year, the aggressive way that Georgia goes in makes a huge impression on Marcus Roseman and Jalen Carter. Georgia really a fixture in that Sunshine State. After all of that, just be really careful about telling Kirby Smart what he's not going to do. I think that's probably the fair thing there. Drew Odom asking us a good question. Another big story that's kind of gone on this week, unfortunately, is the Devontae Wyatt arrest and what the punishment will be for Wyatt. You know, Kirby Smart has made it one of the, I guess, hallmarks of the Georgia program under his era that all of this gets handled internally. Smart's not particularly forthcoming about player discipline. And in this area, I think that's absolutely the right thing to do. You know, we're kind of in a new age where injury information is protected by privacy a lot more. And if that's going to be the case, then I think the discipline stuff like this ought to also have at least some expectation of privacy. And I say that as a curious person, a person who always wants to know as much as I can about a subject that I care about. And Georgia football is certainly one of those. You know, I want to know as much as I possibly can. But in this particular case, I think that Smart's well within his right to handle all this kind of stuff internally, because I think one of the things that player discipline ends up being sometimes, it gets used as a little bit of a, this is a bigger word than I should be using, or a fancier word than I should be using. It gets used as a cudgel, right? I mean, anytime a player misbehaves, there's a chance for virtue signaling. There's a chance for, you know, the public to say, we demand that you punish this person for the wrongdoing. And in some cases, the coaches, when they're very public with the way in which they're disciplining, I think there can also be a temptation on the part of coaches to do that, to say, hey, I'm going to show the public just how serious I take this kind of stuff and just how law and order I am as a head coach. I think that's the real challenge, or the real temptation anyway, when all of this stuff has, you know, kind of becomes public. But in the case of Kirby Smart, he's kind of chosen to keep this stuff more private. He's kind of chosen to keep this more in-house. And I think that's the right way to go. Now, you occasionally see this kind of creep out from time to time. There were some boosters invited to a scrimmage who saw some guys running stadium steps, for instance. And so every now and then, this kind of sneaks out, becomes a little bit more public. But in terms of being handled privately, being handled internally for Wyatt and everybody else, I'm actually really okay with that from Kirby. I don't have a problem with that really at all. I've taken a couple of Facebook comments. I'll take a couple more YouTube comments. And if you're just joining us, either on video, catching it a little late here, or on our radio program, podcast, what has gone down is we're going to have Mike Griffith on the show. Mike, come to find out, had a scheduling conflict, apparently. So Mike not going to be with us here today. We'll try to catch up with him again soon. So instead of me interviewing somebody else, I'm, I guess, sort of allowing some of you to interview me. Here's part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. Let's get a few more here on YouTube. Dapper Dan says, BA, which position group are you looking forward to seeing the most when the season starts, and which could struggle the most coming out of the gates? Dapper, that's a really good question. So let's talk about this. The one I'm the most looking forward to seeing right now, I think, is probably the defensive secondary. Because I think when you look at Richard LeCount kind of stepping into that more expanded leadership role and how fit he could be for that after 3 years of playing, after everything that's kind of prepared him for this moment, kind of being in that role that J.R. Reed was in a year ago, I think that LeCount's going to really shine there. I think that LeCount's going to really just flourish in that opportunity. And I think the cornerbacks for Georgia are incredibly deep, to say nothing of what I think that Lewisine's kind of ready to do, maybe in the role that LeCount was in last year. If LeCount's the new JRE, Lewisine's kind of the new Richard LeCount, and I think that Scene's maybe made for that as well. But it's also the depth at the cornerback position. When Tyson Campbell was healthy last year, and unfortunately he wasn't healthy for much of last season, but when he was healthy, he really played well. And we know that Eric Stokes is a guy that is good at knocking balls out of the air. This is a guy that makes plays on the ball. And Georgia got a lot of experience last year for DJ Daniel. Keely Ringo is hard to keep off the field. Tyreek Stevenson, based on the way that he emerged last season in a number of different roles, including being kind of a corner blitz pass rusher from time to time, he's a guy that's hard to keep off the field. That defensive secondary, I think, is really deep and going to be really fun to watch. In terms of the position group, I'm probably the most, I guess, curious and concerned about. For me, both of those are probably on the offensive side of the ball. And it's not because there's not talent. It's not because there's not a number of potential options and potential names to consider, but I think you have to look at the running back spot here, and I think you have to look at the wide receiver position. At running back, you couldn't ask for more options. Zamir White's a former number one back. Kendall Milton's a huge fan favorite. James Cook's a guy that people have been waiting to kind of emerge. Deshaun Edwards is kind of a late addition into this discussion. And Kenny McIntosh was a guy that, when he was given a chance last year, really showed a spark. So at the running back position, there's no shortage of names worth considering. And the safer bet is between that, five names that I just mentioned, two or three of those guys will really emerge. But this is probably more unanswered questions than Georgia's had at the running back spot since probably prior to the Nick Chubb, Sony Michel era in 2014. You probably have to go back maybe even, you know, prior to Todd Gurley joining the program to look at a season at the beginning where we know this little about how the running back position is going to really play out. You know, is Zamir White going to show the spark that he once had prior to the two consecutive ACL injuries? Is Kendall Milton, like so many other Georgia running backs have been, ready to go as a freshman? Is there a role for James Cook in a Todd Monken offense that maybe he was never going to find in a more traditional offense, at least traditional by Georgia standards, the last couple of years? What about McIntosh? What about Edwards? That's a fun position group to watch, but there are admittedly some unanswered questions there. I'll say the same thing about the wide receiver position as well. You know, if all goes well with Dominic Blaylock's recovery from ACL injury, and there's no reason to think it won't, then he ought to be a real answer. George Pickens, y'all know by now how I feel about him. He ought to be a real answer. But what about the rest of that? Whether it be a combination of guys who are on the roster, like D-Rob, Kyrus Jackson, whether it be some group from those guys that Georgia signed, a Roseme, a Burton, a Justin Robinson who's on campus right now, you know, Arian Smith who brings the speed. You know, can you find four or five guys to give you better play than a year ago? We've gone around and around about what happened with the offense last year. And I've obviously stated my belief that I thought that the receiver position was scapegoated too much for the problems that Georgia had. And I think that's something I'm going to stand behind. However, whether we sort of mince words on that or not, semantic differences aside, the receiver position was a problem. The receiver position was a little bit of an issue, more than a little bit of an issue. It was a significant issue. It needs to be better in 2020. And the combination of names that I just mentioned trying to get that way, that's something I'm going to be watching pretty closely. And I would say if you're talking about position groups you have a concern about, I don't think that much has changed with the receiver position to kind of take it off that list. We're having a good time here. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather and Tharp. I'll have more of your questions for me on both Facebook and YouTube. And, of course, if you're someone that listens later on, whether it be radio show, podcast, and you want to get your thoughts heard on any subject, if you can't comment live as we're doing this, you can always reach out to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. I'll also tell you this, we're going to be live tomorrow out and about. I'd love to have you come by and see me. If you're anywhere near the downtown Atlanta area, tomorrow we're going to do the show live from the Georgia World Congress Center for the Atlanta International Auto Show. That's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be there right there at Building C. The gates open at noon to get in, so when you get there, we'll already be there. So you can come by and see us for that. That's going to be a ton of fun. And if you can't be there tomorrow, don't forget the auto show is actually already going on today. It started yesterday. It's going on today there as well at the Georgia World Congress Center. All kinds of trucks, cars, SUVs, like 24 manufacturers are represented, kind of giving you the full array of what's out there in the new automobiles. A really, really fun thing to be able to check out. There's also some special attractions. The RV from Christmas Vacation is going to be on hand, some exotic cars from Caffeine and Octane. So adult tickets are just $12. Kids tickets, that's kids 6 through 12, are just $6. If you're 5 and under, you're free. Also, discounts available for seniors and heroes. So please make sure you check that out. GoAutoShow.com for tickets and more details. That's GoAutoShow.com. I'll see you tomorrow live there for Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, we'll also hang around and we'll do our AJC Falcons News Now, sponsored by Miller Lite, at 1 p.m. Chuck Smith going to be a part of that, the former Falcon, the former SEC great. So you can come by and see him, come by and see me. By the way, I'm going to have a little note on the Falcons here later on the program, something they have done that not exactly pleasing me right now. We'll do that with you coming up here on our program today. Let me do a few more comments while we have some time to do that. Of course, we always appreciate you being with us. I'll do a couple more YouTubes and a couple more Facebooks, and then we'll kind of roll on with the rest of the show. Dwayne Street says, dogs are loaded with Uber talent. Haters, keep hating the dogs. Feed on it. Go, dogs. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Georgia has been good enough now. And by the way, Christy wants to come by the Congress Center tomorrow and get herself a Corvette. I'm sure there'll be plenty of those there. So, Christy, hope you will come by and see us. But to Dwayne's point about the haters, Georgia's been good enough now for a little while that it has certainly developed some haters. And for a lot of UGA fans, when the dogs finally do get over the hump and win that championship, the opportunity to vanquish those haters is going to end up being one of the fun parts of that. S. Beat says, where can I get that hoodie that I'm wearing? This actually came from our friends over at Tailgate Apparel, so you can check that out from them there in downtown Athens. So this was a gift from them, and I do enjoy wearing this. Chase Spitzer says, what's the story with Richard LeCount? That's obviously, I think, a reference anyway to some rumors from back this weekend. There's no story with Richard LeCount. Richard LeCount's as much a part of this Georgia program as he's ever been. At least that's my understanding on all of this. You got to be careful with off-season rumors. For the most part, they exist to fill an information void that kind of shows up this time of year. Just keep your head on a swivel for anything that feels too unverified, I guess. Yeah, just keep your head on a swivel about that. The Green Soldier checking in on YouTube to say is, when UGA finally breaks through and wins that big game, it's going to be a sweet ride. And obviously, and I think that Green Soldier's right about that, one thing that brings to mind is a lot of what you've heard this week. There's this weird version of naysaying out there of, well, Georgia may have, you know, made a big move in February. They hired Scott Cochran, but they still got to beat Alabama on the field. That's like the... If you listen to a lot of radio, if you watch a lot of streaming video shows like this, a lot of online content, that's kind of like the big thing that you hear a lot of. Well, Georgia may have, you know, brought in Scott Cochran, but they still got to win. You know, they still got to beat Alabama on the field. They still got to do all of that. That's a straw man argument, because you're actually arguing against someone that is not trying to argue back with you. No one's going to deny. No one would ever say that having success in December, January, February, whether it be hiring assistant coaches, bringing in recruits, things of that nature, no one would ever say that that is equal to or on par with winning in September, October, November, December, certainly going into the start of January. No one would ever say that. However, what the people who want to, like, kind of naysay when Georgia gets recruiting wins, when Georgia makes bold assistant coaching hires, when they want to kind of downplay that because Georgia hasn't yet won a national championship. Here's what my response would be back to the people who would kind of argue that point. Show me someone who's won a national championship that didn't start off by doing things like this, that didn't start off by having a great offseason, because that's what the Georgia hater likes to say. Oh, Georgia, offseason champions once again. Show me a national champion who didn't also have a great offseason, who didn't also have elite recruiting classes year after year leading up to that national championship, who didn't make the boldest, most aggressive assistant coaching hires possible. Show me someone who's won a national championship that didn't lay the foundation for that national championship by doing these kinds of things. So I'm not going to tell you that hiring Scott Cochran or hiring Todd Monken is the same thing as winning a championship, or having a number one recruiting class in two of the last 3 years is the same thing as winning a national championship. That's not what I'm going to say. But what I will say is this, is that those are the kinds of things that national champions do. If that's what you aspire to, this is the way you have to behave. These are the actions you have to take. Georgia has taken those actions now, has put itself in a position, and now it does need to go out and win on the field. But you can't win these big games on the field without laying the groundwork for that. And thankfully, over the course of the last few years, certainly the last couple of months, Georgia's taken some big steps in that direction. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, is rolling on right now.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So a little fun, a little different, do things a little differently today. You having a chance to interview me, and I really enjoyed that. Of course, if you're live on video, we'll get more of your comments on Facebook and YouTube a bit later on. And of course, as I said before, you can always reach out on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily if you want to keep the conversation going. For now, though, we need to cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. Let me tell you about Oasis of the Seas, one of the most awarded ships at sea, also a ship that's recently undergone an incredible amplification, completely reimagining this beautiful ship, making it bigger and better than it's ever been before, adding Ultimate Abyss, the tallest slide at sea, 10 decks down, big-time plunge there, Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. If you're a sports fan, when you're at sea, you want to be able to settle in and enjoy some good sports, that's what Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade gives you a chance to do. There's also like nightlife venues, the Music Hall, Lime and Coconut, Bionic Bar, you got robotic arms making your drinks, things like that. It is all one of the things that makes a Royal Caribbean cruise so much fun. I know you need a vacation. It's time now to start thinking about yours here for 2020. So make sure you check that out, whether it be contacting your own travel advisor or let me recommend my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. That's 800-326-4971. 800-326-4971. Let them know you heard about them right here with us on Dog Nation Daily. And of course, it's always fun to tell you about everything going on with a Royal Caribbean cruise. All right, let me do this. And I realize that this is going to sound dumb, but let me make a case for why I think it's not quite as dumb as initially sounds. I think the SEC should go after USC. And I think the SEC should add the University of Southern California into its profile of schools. Now, the reason why I say this is because I wrote about this week at DogNation.com. There is a huge level of financial turmoil facing the Pac-12. And if you're a school that has options, USC does, getting out of the Pac-12 and looking at something different, and the idea has been floated of, well, maybe USC would just become an independent. That's certainly an option, and geographically that probably makes more sense. But we're kind of past the age of geography mattering much when it comes to conferences. The ACC is the Atlantic Coast Conference, and yet you've got, you got Syracuse in the league now. You got Boston College in the league now. You know, the original footprint of the ACC has long since been forgotten. Even the SEC, which is supposed to be the Southeastern Conference, what you have in that school in that conference anymore isn't quite as Southeast as it used to be. There's Missouri. I don't think of Missouri as a Southeastern team. That's a Midwestern team to me. Texas A&M, I don't think that is a Southeastern team. It is in the South, but I think of it as more the Southwest. Culturally, College Station, Texas, and Athens, Georgia are very different places. So you've kind of given up on the idea of the SEC being the Southeastern Conference anyway. You've sort of stretched beyond that. So why not stretch as far as you can and bring in USC? Now, I realize that travel-wise, this would be a huge, huge problem. I shouldn't say a problem. This would be a huge issue for a lot of programs in the SEC. But take Georgia fans here for a moment. Georgia fans love the travel. Georgia fans get more excited about going a long way away to watch Georgia play sometimes than they do about going a few miles down the road seeing the team play in Athens. I mean, it's easier to get 40,000 Georgia fans to show up in Nashville or show up in South Bend, Indiana, than it is to get 90,000 to show up to watch Austin Peay in Athens. Georgia fans love the trips. They love the destinations. We already know they love going to Southern California because they, to the tunes of tens upon tens of thousands, headed out there for Pasadena and the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago. The occasional trip to L.A. to face USC doesn't seem like that much of a stretch either. Plus, we're probably not that far away from an NFL team being in London. So if you can fly this direction in the Atlantic, why can't you fly the other direction back towards the Pacific and go to California? Ultimately, is something like this going to happen? I wouldn't say never for the SEC, for anybody else. I think just given, and if you'll read the piece that I wrote this week at DogNation.com, I kind of go into more detail about this. Given the huge imbalance that exists between certain conferences, it's really the SEC and the Big Ten right now, far out in front of the rest. We'll see how the ACC has changed once its network is fully implemented. But with the Big Ten SEC right now, from a financial standpoint, well out in front of the rest of their college sports brethren, some other big radical realignment, much the same way we kind of experienced about a decade or so ago, some other version of that moving forward, I wouldn't say that's never going to happen. And I wouldn't dare suggest that one day the SEC couldn't look even more different in the future than it does right now. So why not get in on the ground floor of this? If USC is really looking for a another place to go, maybe offer them a little bit of a home in the SEC here. I'm sure many of you probably think that's dumb, but we'll see. We'll see what the future holds for college sports on that. Let me do a couple other things here as we're cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. I also think it's really interesting at the scouting combine this week, that debate that emerges between Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. Now, these two guys aren't debating each other, but quarterbacks being debated about, whether it be the presumed number one pick Joe Burrow, and this always happens. When you get a little closer to the draft process, you stop hearing about how good a player is, and you start hearing about how, you know, what's wrong with him and why maybe he shouldn't be the number one overall pick, hand size or this or that. It certainly seems like there's a lot of talking up of Tua Tagovailoa right now. I like the draft because I'm curious to see who gets picked where and where players end up going. But I don't like the draft process in terms of how it's handled by the media, because there's a lot of smoke screens out there. A lot of people saying, you know, this player's rising up boards, this player's falling up, you know, falling down boards. Ultimately, I'm not quite sure any of this really means anything. I mean, the big knock on Tua Tagovailoa is going to be, can he stay healthy? We've seen 2 years in a row where he just hasn't stayed healthy. Is he a special prospect if he's healthy? Maybe he is, but that's a hypothetical situation not worth considering because he hasn't been healthy in each of the last two seasons. And the most serious of those injuries is the last one that occurred. Obviously, a lot of people are going to say, but yeah, but he's got a clean bill of health. I'm not buying that any more than I'm buying any of the other things that have been kind of, you know, put out there as of late. Everyone lies during the draft process. I don't know that Tua Tagovailoa is injured, but I certainly wouldn't be so quick to believe, you know, some dramatic clean bill of health right now. My issue with Burrow is the offense that he played in last year. I think that Joe Brady was such a good offensive coordinator that for a guy like Burrow, who is a good quarterback, and when I saw him live, he may have been the best I've seen live. But I think success in that offense with that talent around him, I just think is easier. Do I think that Burrow is a game-changing NFL quarterback prospect? I guess I probably don't. So as much as I've, you know, watched so many snaps of the Tua Tagovailoa college years and the Joe Burrow college years and been impressed by both, I guess I'm not exactly sure that I think either one of those is a game-changing NFL prospect, but they're going to be at the center of all the discussion. And it should be interesting to see where it goes next. We'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Let me also say one more thing about Burrow and Tagovailoa as we transition into our next topic here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. I thought it was interesting that the Washington Redskins, holders of the number two pick, after having drafted a quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, from Ohio State last year, have also, according to reports, met with Tagovailoa and Burrow this year, even though it stands to reason that they probably won't be taking a quarterback. It's been largely assumed that Chase Young, the pass rusher from Ohio State, is on his way to Washington, and yet Washington still doing due diligence, meeting with Burrow and meeting with Tagovailoa. An NFL team that has not done that is apparently the Atlanta Falcons. Let me show you a really interesting, a small piece of a really interesting article from the Falcons official website, AtlantaFalcons.com, where the reporters that cover the Falcons for the team side have chronicled, like, I think it's a total number of 13 different running backs the Falcons met with, but I'm going to read this to you. Georgia running back DeAndre Swift, considered among the very best players at his position in the draft, said he had not met with the Falcons and did not have a meeting planned with them this week. So if DeAndre Swift, and this is from AtlantaFalcons.com, as I said before, so if DeAndre Swift says, I don't have any plans to meet with the Falcons, and if they've met with, in informal capacity anyway, with as many as 13 running backs, we pretty much know on the basis of just where things are going that Atlanta's looking for a running back somewhere near the front end of this draft. They have three picks in the top 55. I've written at DogNation.com before, given what I understand with the Falcons, given what I know about Swift, I think Atlanta ought to draft DeAndre Swift in the first round. But it sounds like, on the basis of this reporting, Atlanta may not be considering him at all. I think that DeAndre Swift will eventually make this look like a mistake, because the players that would be available to Atlanta, and I realize that, a lot of you don't live in Atlanta and you don't really care who the Falcons draft, but many Georgia fans also live in the state of Georgia and would be interested to see a Georgia player play for the Falcons. I think Swift is going to be good enough at the NFL level to make Atlanta regret it if they look to a different running back or a different position in that number 16 pick. But for now, that seems to be the direction that the Atlanta Falcons are heading, as according to the reporting there from AtlantaFalcons.com. I'll mention one more thing at the door here. So last night would have been a real opportunity for Georgia basketball. And good game, overtime against South Carolina. Big performance from Anthony Ant-Man Edwards once again. Just not quite able to get it done, though, against South Carolina. Gamecocks, one of those kind of like bubble teams. I think Lenardi, Joe Lenardi from ESPN, has them not the first four out, but the next four out. So they're one of the eight teams kind of outside the bracket picture right now who could fight their way into the tournament. Georgia, if you could win a game on the road against a team playing for its tournament life, that'd be kind of a real statement on the heels of the two wins that Georgia's collected in a row recently, including the big one over Auburn at home recently, but just not able to get done. So a real opportunity for Georgia last night, but not one the Dogs were able to capitalize on. So we'll continue to follow them as they head towards the SEC tournament. I mean, I still feel, for the most part, that this is a Georgia team that's going to be, you know, pretty fun to watch in the SEC tournament. I think Ant-Man makes UGA a little bit of a tough out. But last night was a chance to establish some real momentum, not just beating a bad team on the road the way that Georgia did with Vanderbilt, but actually putting three wins in a row together against a team that had to have the game and a coach, Frank Martin, that's been pretty good in spots like that in the past. But Georgia's just not quite ready for that. There was a offensive foul call on Sevier Wheeler there late in the game, where maybe he should have pulled up and taken a jump shot. But if he shoots the three, maybe Georgia wins the game. He tries to drive to the basket. You kind of understand why. Freshman maybe a little bit out of control right there. A pretty good game, but Georgia not able to get it done in Columbia. What has been able to be done is the Gatorator update, because we're now looking at a nice little number here, 1,216 days. That's how long it's been since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs, and that's good news here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.